And next we'll go to the A-140 amendment. Anybody wish to move the A-140?
Mr. Chair, that is...
Representative Liebling.
That is mine as well. I would move the A-140 amendment. And, Mr. Chair, this is what I would call sort of the sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander amendment, because we've heard from the health plans that there are all kinds of problems with selecting who gets to be on the exchange. They don't like the idea that the exchange board that there would be qualified plans and that not all of them would be selected. And we've heard how this is, under their point of view, that this is going to create all kinds of problems. Well, they do the same thing, members, when they select health providers who are going to be in their network. You can have lots of health providers who would be willing to agree to contract terms, who would meet quality standards and so on, and yet they don't get selected to be part of the network. And we've never heard any, the plans don't seem to think that this impedes their ability to keep costs down or anything like that. So I think that putting this in would mean that there would be, first of all, for consumers, a bigger network under each plan. There are probably lots of providers who would want to be part of the network who are not accepted currently. So I think this would have a lot of good effects on the marketplace, and so I would ask for your vote on this.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair and members, while I respect the substantive argument made by Representative Liebling, I just think this is the wrong bill for the in which to make the argument or allow for this amendment. There is a separate market rules bill that is going to be introduced sometime this week or early part of next. And this is obviously one of those debates that I'm gathering will be hotly debated in the course of the market rules bill, but that's not what this particular legislation is about. So for that reason, I'd oppose this amendment.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, this is a great amendment. I've been working on this for 14 years and 7 weeks. The problem is exactly as Representative Liebling has described. I'm lucky. I'm in every plan. I've been in practice 34 years, and I'm in. The students, the young doctors, and just had an audiologist who had to deal with Blue Cross, and they actually helped her out by getting her in the network. This is not limited to one provider group. This is a big deal. If you're young in practice and you're not in a big group, how do you get to serve anybody in all these plans we're talking about? They are absolutely carved out, absolutely carved out. They come out with...
My name is Jeff Barsh. I represent Medica. Representative Liebling, thanks for the opportunity to provide some comments on this. As the exchange bill has moved forward, and we've had concerns about the particular provision in the House that allows an active purchasing process for the exchange, one of our concerns has been that the criteria for how the exchange makes those determinations are unknown. And we simply ask that if the exchange is going to be making selection criteria other than the broad qualifications in the marketplace, we know what those are in order to be able to participate and put forward products for consideration on the exchange, knowing what the rules are. The provision in terms of an any willing provider allowing a provider to come to our network and limits our ability to establish a network that we think best meets the needs of our members is a provision that we have long resisted, because we want the ability to provide a network that, one, meets the needs of our consumers along with the guidelines and regulations of the state of Minnesota, but also allows us to control cost. And quite frankly, it's an important tool we use to control the cost for our premium paying members by making sure that we have the ability to contract with providers who meet our needs, not just on reimbursement and on quality. Quite frankly, if you open up the network to anyone, it will increase costs. If you build it, they will come. And we do believe it's an important aspect of insurance in order to provide a robust network, but also one that meets our needs to help consumers reduce their overall prices.
Representative Norton.
Mr. Barsh, so why is what you not just said true for the exchange as a whole?
Mr. Barsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton. As I mentioned early on, if the exchange wanted to set criteria that were published, and they chose to limit health carriers based on a set of known criteria. Philosophically, we'd have an issue with that. We don't think that would be in the best interest of consumers. But as we stated, what we want to know is what those criteria are and how they're measured.
Representative Norton.
That's the exact argument, Mr. Barsh, Mr. Chair, that my provider in my community that has a business asks me. I meet the qualifications. I'm not allowed in. So I would just say I'm on your side on this one, but I'm not on your side on this argument when it comes, when you're carrying the argument from why we shouldn't do it here to why you don't do it for my, you know, my constituent who has a legitimate business that meets all the rules. He wants in too, or she wants in. So I just, I guess I just send that message that what is good for the goose should be good for the gander, and perhaps you will see more discussion in the future bill on market rules.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say, Mr. Barsh, what you've said, they need to know, we need to know the rules. I don't think there's any dispute about that part. The active purchaser, though, isn't just about having the rules. That's about we meet the rules, but we still don't get picked. I thought that was where the complaint is. We meet the rules, but we still cannot, we might get a plan together, a product together that meets these rules that the exchange sets out, but the exchange will still not pick us. And I heard in my office how terrible that was, because a plan might spend some money getting a product ready and still not get picked. And that's exactly what we're talking about here on the other end, where providers can meet all the standards and still not get picked to be in the network. And I agree with Representative Norton. What you said exactly sets out the argument. It's exactly the argument that we're making about the exchange and why we should have active purchaser and the ability of the exchange to pick who they want, to pick the best ones as they see it for the consumer from the pool of people who meet the qualifications. So, Mr. Chair, I am going to withdraw this for now, but I want to make it really, I think the exchange also has to be able to meet the needs of the consumer and control costs by picking the ones that it wants, that it feels best meet those needs. And if an open network increases costs when it's an open network of providers, I don't see why the plans then can make the argument that an open network will, the same will be true. Yeah, that an open network in the exchange will increase costs. So you can't have it both ways. And I think that's what the plans are trying to do here. But I'm going to withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to have the discussion.
The amendment's been withdrawn. Do you still wish to comment?
Mr. Chairman, I just one clarification, then I appreciate that, and we'll continue the conversation. By increasing the number of providers in a network, you're increasing the desire and utilization, and that ultimately drives up cost. That's the difference, is an increase in the size of a network increases utilization of services, which drives underlying healthcare costs. Whether or not you select a number of health plans in the exchange or how you set that criteria, that doesn't increase utilization of healthcare costs. And I guess that's the difference, and we can continue to have the conversation.
Okay. Mr. Representative McDonald, do you still wish to comment? Or okay. And Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Barsh. I really just wanted to follow up on your last comment, because I could interpret that as saying that limiting the number of providers in order to make wait times for needed appointments would be a way to control costs, and I hope that is not your goal, because if you have a list of 100 providers in a particular specialty, I don't know that increases demand and utilization. It just gives consumers more choice. And so I really would like you to clarify the concept that having many providers in an area would increase costs, because that would increase demand, because it will only constrain demand if you have too few providers and the wait time to an appointment is really strangling the system. So I'm not sure if that was the point you meant to make.
Mr. Barsh, if you wish to comment, go ahead. Otherwise,
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, certainly no one would create a network that would restrict necessary access in their state laws that and state regulators that make sure that's not the case. I would, however, suggest that part of my comments were to say that if you have an overexpansive network, particularly of specialists or other services, that does tend to lead to greater utilization. I'm happy to follow up with you and get you some more information on some different groups who have looked at that today or so you have that information.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barsh. And the amendment is withdrawn. We'll move on to the A-141.
Mr. Chairman, that's an author's amendment.
I will move the A-141 amendment, and Mr. Atkins, do you want to explain what I just moved?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman. The Senate set out a little bit further direction for the board relative to requirements for navigators, call center, in-person assisters. I've got Mr. Golden here from DHS. We think this moves in the right direction. It may not be all the way that we want to go, but we think it helps a lot. And for that reason, I would support this amendment, ask for your support, and be happy to provide Mr. Golden for any specific questions relative to the amendment.
Okay. Are there any questions? I don't see any, so all those in favor of the A-141 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So the A-141 is adopted. And I think I'm going to skip through the list here and move to...
That's mine, Mr. Chair.
So we're on the 164.
And Mr. Chair, there's two similar ones, two different people drafted. 164 and 174 are very, very similar. It's just a matter of technical drafting. So I'll move the A-164 and won't be offering the second one unless that's deemed to be better if the author likes that. But this has to do with, we've heard over and over about that the exchange board is regulating the exchange and the world outside the existing market is going to be left alone. And this clarifies, which I believe is a technical statement from what I've heard testimony about, that the market rules bill is a different matter. This is about the exchange board itself that has no authority to regulate the world outside the exchange. That's the summary of it. This is actually a big deal. The short version of it. We discussed it a bit on Thursday night about the general world outside the exchange, and we were told, no, this is not in this bill, and this would just clarify that it's not in this bill. And I'd like to hear what the author thinks about this helpful suggestion to make a bill even better that's moving our way.
Representative Atkins.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I have no doubt that you're intending it as a helpful suggestion to make the bill even better. And I'm hearing you. I'm just for now opposing you. First and foremost, for the same reason that I had I challenged Representative Liebling, which is we're talking a little bit about market rules legislation, and there's a separate bill that's moving. It's my understanding that this may also not quite be in line with what federal law requires of us. So while I'm hearing you and while I'm happy to keep talking to you about this as we go through, either in this bill or the market rules bill, for now I'd ask that members oppose this effort.
Thanks. And Mr. Chair, could I just ask for one?
Representative Abler.
We have a limited time, and I'm not trying to filibuster anything. I've got a bunch of amendments, but this is probably a really important topic. Could I just have one witness come down and comment on why they see the value of this? I haven't picked one, but I bet they kind of choose, and so whoever draws the short straw, Mr. Chair, could you invite the loser of the short straw drawing to come down and testify about this, please?
Is there somebody in the audience who would like to testify on this relatively briefly? Oh, they're all looking over their shoulders. Yeah. For it looks like Mr. Griffith got the short straw.
Obviously, it's not choreographed.
Members of the committee, my apologies for the delay. My name is Phil Griffin. I represent Preferred One. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans this morning. Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, in answer to your question, I think this is the issue that we testified on. I believe it was Thursday evening. Maybe it was Friday morning. I'm losing track of the days. But for us, we believe that having a robust market inside and outside the exchange is an important thing. And we don't understand the need to control the marketplace and have everything work with inside the exchange. The exchange was designed to set up and fix some problems that have been seen in the small group and individual market, and we believe that there is a place for that. That's why we brought a bill to you last session and tried to set up something on a statewide exchange, and we know that we're working on this session. And I think we've talked with Representative Atkins numerous times about the need to have that inside and outside the exchange robust. And as I said to the committee last week, I don't think the issue of adverse selection that was described by the exchange staff really applies, because we are not dealing with insurance inside and outside the exchange. Adverse selection relates to the selection of people based on their health care, not in terms of which plans are going to be inside and outside the exchange, which is what we're talking about in this amendment. So we would encourage the committee to say, let's have as much competition as possible. We don't understand why limiting the number of plans and the number of carriers inside the exchange and limiting them that are outside the exchange to the same rules that are inside and outside makes any sense. If you want a robust market, you want people to have choices, and that's what we would encourage you to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I won't go on.
Representative Mack, did you have a question for Mr. Griffin?
No, for the author, Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a clarifying question for something Representative Atkins said. You referenced some concern over this because it possibly would violate federal law. I was just curious, as I'm reading this, on line 1.9 and 1.10, it says any health benefit plan that meets state and federal law must be allowed for sale outside the Minnesota insurance marketplace. So it looks like the amendment would take care of anything that might violate federal law. And if the exchange is going to be a clearinghouse for products within the exchange, I guess I'm wondering, you know, to me this just seems like good safety language to ensure that we're going to make sure that we're going to have a robust marketplace outside of the exchange. So I guess I'm just curious for clarification on how it would violate federal law.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Mack. I would request some assistance from the executive director of the exchange to talk. I think it's a technical issue relative to how it might not conform with federal rules. I'd also take this opportunity, by the way, to point out that in Representative Gottwalt's version of this bill a year ago, he actually had in there that the market rules would be the same inside and outside for the same reasons that people like me are concerned about it now, is that if you have different rules inside and outside, potentially it ends up being an adverse selection challenge, and you end up in sort of this death spiral of the exchange where the good risk goes out, the bad risk comes in. So I think that that's probably why Representative Gottwalt had it in his bill, that the rules be the same inside and outside. But as far as the federal issue, I think
Ms. Todd Amamov. Welcome to the committee. State your name, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is April Todd Amamov. I'm the exchange director. Representative Mack, to your question, and I think you're referencing, and forgive me, but I was discussing another amendment. Are you referring to lines 1.3 through 1.5? I just want to make sure that I'm addressing your question appropriately.
Mr. Chair, I was referencing
Representative Mack.
1.9 and 1.10, and I guess just anywhere in here, it seems to me where I reference would make sense, but that the amendment seems to take care of making sure we wouldn't be violating federal law. And so I guess I was just trying to look for clarification how this would violate federal law if this amendment were to go on.
So you're referencing the one that says any health benefit plan that meets state and federal law must be allowed for sale outside the Minnesota insurance marketplace, that provision?
Representative Mack.
Mr. Chair, I guess I was pointing to that, but I guess we could just, we don't have to hone in on that. I guess the statement that was made was that the concern would be that this amendment would violate federal law, and I guess I'm asking for clarification in how exactly it would violate federal law.
Thank you, Representative Mack.
Ms. Todd-Nomov.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, I think what Representative Atkins was referring to was actually line 1.3 through 1.5, and that's where it is saying that that the board would not have the power to regulate, influence, or restrict in any way health benefit plans that meet state and federal criteria, even if the health benefit plans do not include additional criteria established by the Minnesota insurance marketplace. So that is essentially saying that those plans that would participate in the marketplace, they wouldn't need to comply with the certification requirements established by the board. That would be a violation of federal law, because they would have to comply with those certification requirements.
Okay. So specifically,
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the reference to lines 1.7 through 1.12, I don't know that I have any objection to that. It's in 1.3 through 1.5, a word like influence, for example, where it says the board should not have the power to regulate, influence, or restrict in any way the health benefit plan that meets federal. That is one of those, you know, as a lawyer, my red light goes on in my head about what sort of impact via the word influence or restrict in any way would be the next phrase that I'd hook into is we might just be setting ourselves up for a problem if we have rather unclear language like that.
Representative Abler. Representative Mack.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up to make sure I understood what Ms. Todd Malmilov said. Could you just explain to me, only because I might not be familiar and maybe missed a little part of your answer, what federal law requires? I'm just trying to walk through your answer. You said the certification process, and could you just walk me through that a little bit, what federal law requires and how this would possibly mess with that? I'm just not familiar or just lost that connection piece there.
Ms. Todd Malmilov.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, so the federal law requires for certification that that in addition to state standards, that there be categories for certification. Network adequacy is one of them. Marketing is another one. But it doesn't specify in federal law what those standards are. And so that in this bill is established by the Exchange Board. So the specifics of that criteria, given that they're not specified in federal law, would be those requirements that the plans to participate would need to comply with.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Well, Representative Atkins, do you think that 1.7 and 1.12 is all right for now, and we can work on the other half?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I think so.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would move to delete lines 1.2 to 1.6 and then offer the rest, and we'll work on the rest later.
I think you should just delete 1.3 to... 1.6.
Well, the staff can give technical, whatever. We're just deleting that new language on the first half. So,
what? Representative, or Mr. Chun?
Mr. Chair, you could delete lines 1.2 to 1.6.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair,
I'd never argue with Mr. Chun.
I'll incorporate that and... And I think Mr. Hanson would like to offer a comment, and then we can just vote. So I'll incorporate that. And just, okay. I see Mr. Hanson at the wings there, like to offer a comment.
Okay, we have.
Oh, you have to say that. Sorry.
Yep. Representative Abler modifies his amendment to strike lines 1.2 to 1.6. And thank you, Ms. Momlov. And is there anybody in the audience that wanted to testify briefly? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. It's 2,400 employers, 80% of which are small businesses eligible to participate in the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. We support this amendment in its entirety. prior to striking lines 1.3 through 1.5 for a simple reason. It underscores a point of clarity that we think is important moving forward, not only with the current bill, but also the forthcoming market rules bill, which is that small businesses very much want a robust market to exist outside of the exchange market. And the purpose is simple. Many of our small businesses like their current health plans, and they would like the continued availability of those plans when they're selecting products for themselves and their employees in forthcoming years, especially at a time when there are seismic changes in health coverage and when the exchange products are somewhat uncertain for those employers. They really are interested in knowing that they will have access to the products that they and their employees rely on. So I think that the purpose of this amendment is simply to ensure a diversity of choice outside the exchange for employers that are still interested in pursuing those products. So we certainly appreciate Representative Abler for offering it and Representative Atkins' support of part of the amendment, and hope that you would continue to consider the issue of clarifying that robust market should continue, not only with respect to House File 5, but also the forthcoming market rules bill. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not for Ms. Johansson, but just in general, I guess maybe a question to Representative Atkins. But why would we want to do this right now in this bill? I mean, this does we're saying, if I'm understanding this right, that the exchange, that the we can't have the same rules inside and outside the exchange if this goes on, or that the board can't set the rules for both. And I think that's a discussion that really needs to happen in a different place. I think you've referred to that. I have to say, I don't fully understand all the arguments. I think there are pros and cons to why you'd have the same market rules or not inside and outside the exchange, but I just don't know why we would want to put this on at this point when we haven't fully had that discussion. And I would venture to guess that most of the members of this committee aren't really ready to put a stake in the ground on that issue, and yet that seems to be what this amendment is doing. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. I appreciate the question. We've actually been consistent since the outset about what this board is and what it is not intended to be. What it's expected to have some control over is what's in the marketplace, the health insurance marketplace. What we've said consistently, committee after committee after committee, is that we are not trying to control the entire market. And so to the extent that that is dovetails with precisely what this amendment says, I think it's consistent with the, not that when we move through in the market rules section, a separate legislation, that there won't be some tie-in between inside and outside, but we're not trying to turn this board, in spite of some allegations that it's going to be a super agency with all omnipotent power. Believe it or not, we really are not trying to do that and have that sort of impact on the entire marketplace, but solely what's inside the market.
So, Mr. Representative Liebling.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins, thank you. So my understanding then is that if this goes on, it simply leaves that other discussion for another day. It doesn't really change anything right now concerning
Representative
the
Atkins.
Market.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, you're exactly right.
People
will have strong feelings on either side of that, but that will be certainly a vibrant debate during the course of the market rules legislation.
Well, I think that finishes up the debate on this amendment. And Representative Abler, this is a very controversial issue, and right now I support your amendment.
Thank you.
So all those in favor of the A-164 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the A-164 as amended is adopted. Next we have I went the wrong way here. The that's 167 is not yours, is it, Jim?
It is, yes.
Okay, the A-167 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can find it. This has to do with this. There's a few main topics that really swirl around this, and the conflict of interest is another one, and I actually appreciated the labeling amendment from before, saying that you had with the revolving door is actually one way to address conflicts. You can't go out and enrich yourself with what you've created. I'd like to move the A-167 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler moves the A-167.
And Lucy, if you want to pass out that oral one, this is the right time for that. I actually have three amendments on this topic, and trying to provide a buffet of choices to the membership. And I know this is a very controversial. That's for later, that one. I have this one, the A-168, if I can take that up next, and then an oral amendment. But the whole topic about conflict is a really good discussion. And so we don't want people in there that are going to be corrupt. And with all respect to certain famous insurance companies, there's one with three initials that starts with an A and ends in a G that kind of picked up some, that kind of created some flack for behaviors that we found to be not very good. Oh, yeah. Oh, the eye is silent. And so I don't want that either. But yet, we want to have people know what they're doing. And I think if I were writing this bill, I would take this amendment and just be done with the whole one-year bar. Because the governor, under the current version, the governor is going to be making 7 appointments. His commissioner will be one, and then 6 other people. And the governor becomes the arbiter of the bar. But wait, there's more. It's like the pole peel pocket fisherman. It does more things than that. You have the Senate has to ratify the choices. And the Senate is not... We're going to be without due diligence, and the House under this version also has to ratify. No. So for a person who worked for that company that was going to just enrich themselves, they would be found out by one of the 201 members of either body, and then the 202 county, the governor and his staff. So anyway, that's my point. I'd like to hear what the author thinks about this way to make the bill a little bit better.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I have members that have approached me and say that the one-year separation period for board members is actually too short, and have talked about 2 years or even 5 years to make sure that there is a very distinct separation between the two. Well, I certainly support the idea of having good expert thought and guidance on this board. I would be very leery about completely doing away with that separation period, and for that reason would not be in favor of this amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ayler.
You know, somehow I thought you'd say that, but I'm going to keep working on you on this thing, because what the point is you want to have people know what they're doing, and I'm going to submit to you that people are 1 year or 4 or 5 years out of a job, either have retired, are dead or weren't any good in the first place because they got let go. And we did, Missouri did vote for a dead guy for senator, but we don't want them serving on this board. And so they would probably, maybe never mind, but you want people who are capable. And frankly, I wouldn't mind stealing a sitting CEO from Allina or Health Partners or somewhere to come into this place and give us the kind of guidance we need. And my next amendment actually discusses recusing. So if you want to talk about that, you can. Otherwise, I plan to withdraw.
Mr. Chair, to the extent Representative wants to change his amendment to say that no dead guys will be allowed on the board, I will 100% support of that.
Mr. Chair, if I can take up the 168 next, I'll withdraw this amendment.
The amendment is withdrawn, and I will say the state of Missouri did elect a dead person to the Senate one time.
And one of the best senators they ever had, I understand.
Okay, yeah.
So that's withdrawn. Mr. Chair, actually, I'd like to offer an oral
amendment. Yeah, the, what is it, 168?
Right. Actually, no, we'll take a while. I'd like to move the 168. And, Mr. Chair, first I'd like to delete line, I'd like to delete on 1.2, delete subdivision 4. I'd like to delete that deletion and just talk about the merits of this. I fear if I leave that in, it will face the same fate as the last amendment. So I would delete the phrase delete subdivision 4 and just leave the text there. And Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment to that, which has been passed out.
You have to repeat that.
Okay, yeah. Could you repeat that? So you're deleting lines 1.3 to 1.7?
No, Mr. Chair. I'm just what this amendment does, it deletes the conflict.
I support
and
that
puts
amendment.
This,
okay.
That makes he probably accept that. Yeah. Mr. Chair, on line 1.2, I'm deleting the phrase "delete subdivision 4 and."
Okay.
So it means that it's just an addition. We're not going to argue about not having a conflict provision.
Okay.
So do you want to repeat that?
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Chun, could you repeat that amendment?
Mr. Chair, it would be on line 1.2, you delete subdivision 4, and you might just, so it technically fits into the bill, you might want to just say page 5 after line 19, insert, and then on line 3, you could call this subdivision 4A.
Mr. Chair, I'll incorporate that.
Okay. Representative Abler.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I passed out an oral amendment, which did not meet the deadline, but I wanted to just talk about this. And so before you rule it out of order, I'll move my oral amendment, but I'm going to withdraw it because it wasn't in time. And that's the paper that was handed out. Did everybody get this thing here? And this is actually a copy of last year's bill, where they allowed that no more than 3 members could have a conflict. And this broaching this as a possible compromise. Mr. Chair, this was the Representative Atkins' language from last year, and it was a great bill then, and I think it's a great bill now. And if he wants to comment about it, I'm just offering this, and then I'm going to withdraw it after he comments, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I just get smarter with time, Representative Abel. I've read last year's bill and then did this year's bill. Actually, I appreciate Representative Abler, with the change that you make. I'm actually thinking that your amendment is fine, because it would just further give directors on the board that much of a potentially higher standard than they currently have. Right now, we've got a one-year separation. But this would also say that if for some reason we didn't capture the potential conflicts, that this would further heighten the conflict of interest demands that would be made upon those people, to the point of if they had a potential bias or appearance of bias impacting their decisions. And with that, I would actually support this amendment the way that it's drafted.
Thank you. And so, Mr. Chair, would Representative Atkins want to comment on the oral amendment where I circled the 3 people thing from last year? Or you've evolved? That was your comment?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, Representative Abler, for pointing out that I did not answer your question.
Okay.
But I supported your amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll withdraw my amendment. I'm getting them. We're just not going to. It may be somewhere to go with later. And, Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler withdraws his oral amendment, but now we're on the A-168 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before we get off this topic, I just wanted to make a comment, because Representative Abler said before one of the things that I think really needs a little bit of pushback, and that is about, and you often hear it about this conflict of interest issue, that people who are opposing the conflict of interest section want to say that we need people who are capable on this board, and that somehow the conflict of interest language keeps capable people off the board. And I just wanted to say that you can have very capable people, and we've got a pretty big universe of them in this state, I would say, who don't have the kind of ties to the industry that are being prevented here. And I just like to bring up as an example the fact that there are 201 legislators here, all of us who make decisions and vote on very important issues, extremely important issues that impact lots of lives in this state. And most of us have not directly worked in the areas in which we are making those decisions. And you could argue that we make them poorly, I don't know. But most of us would say that we are able to do that because we get a lot of help. We listen to people, we listen to our constituents, we get help from people who actually work in certain industries. And I really don't see why this board can't do the same. And I think we can have extremely talented and capable people who don't have the kind of ties to the industry that make people wonder even wonder, even if they're absolutely acting in the interest of the consumer, nobody should have to wonder whether that's the case because they have ties to the industry. So just wanted to make that comment. But as the amendment stands right now, I do support it.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't think we disagree that much, Representative Liebling. But I don't want to just remove from the pool of qualified applicants people who actually have put their life into this world and actually understand it. I don't want a majority of people to be from any particular health plan or any particular hospital or any particular anything. And I would hope there'd be some people who represent the views of Take Action Minnesota and some people who represent the views of Twyla Brace, frankly, that cover the spectrum of people's points of view. No, but that's it. You want it to be a working board who is collegial, and it's like on a good day where we banter back and forth and hammer out the best answer, where at the end the board is disinterested in any particular outcome, but just the best possible outcome. That's what I'm hoping for, and I think the governor is a good arbiter of that. That's all. And if you look at who we put on the Vikings board, it was a bunch of people who have conflicts. A labor representative bought the building, you got the business guy. You know, it's they would not be allowed on this board, yet they're the ones that picked a local builder. And anyway, so I just we'll discuss this further. But thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your support for the amendment.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Abler, I appreciate what you're trying to do here. And I think we actually agree a little bit more on this particular issue. And so I say to the bill's author, having studied the German model, as several other people at this table have had the opportunity to do, many of the decisions about what is offered in their country for health care come from providers. And I think I think the way the bill is written currently disallows us from taking advantage of experts. And so I kind of like the idea of allowing people to be part of the board and non-voting members, because I think they will have things to offer that maybe we're going to be missing in the current model. So I kind of liked your last year's model better, and I appreciate Representative Abler's moving this, which would apply to that probably. You know, it just complements what you've already done in the bill right now, and so I'm willing to support it. But I just think we can learn from what other countries have done, and the German model may not be perfect. But I think there's a lot to be gained from something someone else has done. So I just would encourage you to keep an open mind as we move ahead and make certain that we have those voices at the table that are experts and can offer the committee that will make the decisions proper advice.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. And I just wanted to comment on my amendment per se. If you look at the timestamp, it's not a very old amendment. It hasn't been vetted within the public. But I think that the essence is clear, and I think, as Representative Atkins has suggested, some of these phrases might need wordsmithing, and I don't want to make, you know, nobody can have any interest have bought insurance in the past, but I think it's on the right track, and I do want our members to be not conflicted, so I hope we can pass it, and then if there's any technical details to work out, we can fix those.
Representative Fisher, and then we're going to vote.
Okay, thank you. I was just going to mention is that when we talk about the conflict of interest, that I think there's ways from the receive input other ways, and I think a big part of that is through an advisory committee. So I don't think you're going to have that with an advisory committee. They could provide, you could still have that same expertise, but not have that conflict of interest of people voting on it. So I think that might be a better way to hit that, but I am open to what you're saying on this amendment here.
Okay, Representative Abler renews his motion that A-168, as amended, be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
So the A-168 is adopted, and next we go to Abler's 169 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of what this being involved in this project has generated for me is discussion and calls, and this is meant to generate more of those calls for me. And I'd like to move the A-169 amendment at my own personal peril. And
Mr. Abler, do you want to explain the amendment?
Yeah. Okay. So the point of this is, how are you going to pay for this thing? And just to comment, the Gottwald bill from last year was both cheaper, leaner, didn't have a lot of new rules, which is why they were the same. Didn't burden the fully insured market outside the exchange like this is going to. The 3.5%, this is about the 3.5% being an untenable number. If indeed we've heard that if indeed the subscribers don't come into the exchange, that they're going to have to go up to that 3.5%. And I share Representative Atkins' hopefulness that we can get down to 2.5%, which is part of why I support a state exchange, so we can control our own destiny in that. But if it's not successful, the backup is they're going to collect money the whole first year at this rate and to build up a reserve against the people not buying the policies here. And so if you recall, and so my suggestion in lieu of that is there may be some benefit. I don't think 3.5% benefit to a carrier about all these enrollment and advertising things, but there might be a 1% benefit. And that might not bar some providers like UCARE from coming in who don't have an outside market to shift this to and create the very dynamic that this is meant to be. And this is meant to be a good faith effort. And this is actually my best idea on these two amendments that are coming. And the one, so it's to take it as a 1% out of the plans and then take the others out of the surplus from the healthcare access fund. Now, this is where the phone calls will start, so yeah, go ahead. But I want to challenge the providers. I'm a provider. I pay that tax. I have colleagues who don't get any business out of the Minnesota Care business who pay the tax. For that reason, I was very happy to be successful in repealing it in 2011, starting in end of 2019. But there's a surplus there now. When he wrote the law that you have to have a 25% surplus in that fund, which is over $100 million a year, to get the rate to drop. And so it's going to sit there. And so the in 19, whatever it was, 84 or whenever this thing came to be, the point was, how do we find a way to help poor people and to get health care? And so we created Minnesota Care. We charged everybody 2%, which we called the sick tax, and found a way to do this. This would take a fraction, I think 1/20 of this. $25 million a year would be like 1/20 of the fund, which would be 0.1%, I think would be right. It's 0.1% of the 2% to fund this, which still keeps it below the threshold for a refund, even, just to tell you. The money's not coming to you, doctors. But this is a way to generate, to fund this thing, if we're doing it, and I'm not a big fan of doing it, but if we're going to do it, let's make it so that it actually can do the job. And so if the point of the healthcare access fund and the healthcare and the provider tax was to find money to help people who are poor and now middle class to get coverage, that's the perfect place to take the money from. And so it's a small amount. It sunsets. It probably should be 2020, but that's probably trivial at this point. But this doesn't go past the sunset of the fund. And so we leave unanswered the question about how to fund it after that. But I think this also would give the providers a stake in caring about what the exchange buys. And so there would be some pushback to the governor about if they're just being too spendy and taking their money, that there would be at least one check and balance on the costs. I'm convinced 60-something million dollars a year is too much to spend on this. And I don't know how to fix it, but I do know if people who pay money would care. And I'd see the Mayo Clinic caring, I see the MMA caring, hospitals like, what are you wasting this money on foolish advertising for? And they would push the governor, who would say, come on, guys, ramp it down. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm offering this as an idea.
Well, before I turn it over to Mr. Atkins, let me just comment that most of us know that the federal government has refused to give the rules on the basic health plan, which would have covered people from 138% up to 200, 250, who knows. And that means that we will probably have to keep Minnesota Care operating for at least 1 year. We don't know what that expense is. We've also heard from our exchange staff that they just don't have time to do the wraparounds that we might have been able to do. Whether there's a surplus there or not, we don't know yet because we haven't got fiscal notes. So I would not be supporting this amendment. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At peril of opposing the chair, I won't. For those that care to talk to Representative Abler, his personal cell number is 612-24. I welcome the discussion about how we pay for this. I happen to think that the nexus between those who benefit and those who pay is fairly strong with the withhold. But at the same time, just to demonstrate that I'm open to thinking along lines of how we're paying for it, I think the chair's got an amendment likely to be offered later that ties the cost of the exchange to the anticipated savings from the no longer having to pay into the MCHA assessment, just to sort of tie in the fact that there are some savings elsewhere that that's not exactly what you're looking for here, Representative Abler, but I think it indicates that the chair and the chief author, and I'm guessing many others, are sort of thinking about the funding mechanism that we use and where it's tied into. So,
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief statement, then a question for you, Mr. Chair. I guess if I heard you right, Representative Atkins, you referenced that you think that the burden, for the most part, is going to be bared by those using this program. And I guess the one, and if I was wrong in understanding what you said, please clarify. But I guess the concern that I would have is the numbers that we've seen is we'd be looking at potentially 1.3 million people going into the exchange. Of that, 700,000 would be those on public assistance of some sort and on our public programs coming in through the counties and things of that nature. So one concern that I see with this number is that it's not going to be a burden that's equally borne by the people benefiting from this very large system and IT. And so that's one concern that I have with the funding mechanism as it stands. But for you, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, I haven't heard from the exchange staff on the issue of the wraparound. Could you just explain, or maybe if they could, the timing or what the challenges are with putting that wraparound together and why there's not time or what difficulties there are around that?
Ms. Malmov?
Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, I'd like to clarify one point on Representative Mack's point about that there will be somewhere in the neighborhood 690,000 to 700,000 people that will qualify for public programs. It's a mistaken belief that they are not paying or bearing a share of the cost of operations. There's actually an allocation. Ms. Malmov can explain it better, but an allocation MA that would pick up their share as a portion of the 3.5%, or up to 3.5%. But I'll let Ms. Malmov answer your second question and clarify the first.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, again, April Todd Malmov, for the record, the exchange director. So, Representative Mack, to your first question, there is a portion of the budget that's related to IT that is cost allocated to Medicaid, and that's identified in the fiscal note. The fiscal note also has, I think, on the last page, where it identifies the customer service spending that is currently done by the counties. I think it's roughly $100 million that's done to assist medical assistance clients. That will continue to operate and fund that part of customer assistance for the Medicaid population. And so that's not part of the exchange budget, but those services are still being paid for. And so that's why the customer service portion of the exchange costs in the fiscal note are not cost allocated to Medicaid. And to your second question about the wraparound, I think you've heard many people say, you know, getting the IT system up for this in the period of time that we've been working on it is a challenge, and it is a lot of work to get done in a short period of time. Adding on a wraparound, whether that is premium assistance or cost-sharing assistance, is just not something that we can add on and get that done in the time frame allotted. We've talked about it and tried to figure out with our vendors whether or not we could do that, and it's just not something that we can add on as functionality at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Momo. Representative Mack, this is a key interest to me, how we deal with this population being 138 and 200% of poverty, and I don't think the regular insurance system is designed very well for them. And I was hoping we would get the basic health plan that would allow us to do something to take care of that specific group in sort of a seamless thing for medical assistance. But it looks like that'll be delayed a year, so that won't be ready till won't start till 2015 if it's finally approved. So we'll be back here next year working on the basic health plan. Who else?
Okay.
Mr.
Representative Abler.
Just one last comment, and I think I'll withdraw this. I've learned to count. I was in kindergarten. All you learn in life, you learn in kindergarten. Learning to count is a very productive talent, Mr. Chair. But I want to remind the providers who are going to be unhappy with me before they call. Everybody says, especially some of them favor, you know, raising taxes on some people, and they say, oh, they should pay their fair share, get some skin in the game. And so this is one-tenth. My proposal is about a tenth of a percent. And you're going to, the providers are going to be, especially if you get any willing provider, that'd be like just great. But we're looking at up to 500,000 people that don't have insurance now getting insurance through this whole spectacle of exchange and some privates and whatever, between 400,000 and 500,000 people. And I would just, if I could pay a tenth of a percent to get 500,000 new customers, I would do it. Anyway, Mr. Chair, with that, I will withdraw my amendment. Oh, just one thing else. The 3.5%, you've said this yourself, doesn't fall out of the sky, and it's not going to come out of the plans. It's going to get added on to the cost of the fully insured market, which is going to be the small businesses, the people that have 110 employees that can't self-insure, the medium-sized tool shop in your tool factory in your area. We have a few of those in our industrial park. And the cost overruns are going to be borne by small business. So that's... commerce, as Representative Atkins knows, this is going to approve the rates. The board can't negotiate rates. They're going to discuss costs, but any overruns and the hard cost is going to come from the people, the ones very much struggling even to be offering insurance at all to their small groups. So if you're not careful by overcharging that group, they may actually find ways to pay the penalty and not offer any insurance. And for $2,000, $3,000 a year, depending upon who they are, they're off the hook. And so I just want to caution people who think there's this big goose out there waiting to have more eggs extracted. The golden goose gave one egg a day, and the people lived a very comfortable life. I urge people to think about that. So I'll withdraw this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler withdraws the A-169 amendment. And next we have the A-171. Representative Abler.
No. Oh, Mr. Chair, this is the Senate. I hate to emulate the Senate, Mr. Chair. If you've noticed, my reputation has been like, if they have a good idea, I probably think it's not a good idea. But I just wanted to bring forward the idea that they thought of. If you don't like this idea, maybe you have an amendment coming later that I'll like better. But I wanted to offer what the Senate came up with. This is pretty much general fund. This is the tobacco fee that was challenged by the Supreme Court. Ironically, which I think I helped to name in a press conference with Senator Kiskaden, what are they going to call this tax? I had the MMA proposal, and it was probably some health improvement fee or something, and here it came as the Supreme Court agreed it was a fee. But that's really a general fund because it shifts over. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A-171 and see what the author thinks about the Senate funding version of using the Health Impact Fund.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, I don't like it. It leaves kind of a big hole in the general fund, and that's not what we're hoping to do. But I respect your efforts to try to figure out a way to fund this, and the deference that you give to the senators is just amazing to me. But I nonetheless oppose the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I'm so tantalized by the future offer you're bringing about the MCHA savings, I'm willing to withdraw this one. So just tell the Senate I tried to offer their idea, and that was sort of nice.
Representative Abler withdraws the A-171 amendment, and now we're going on to the 172.
Mr. Chair, just one cute thing is, as you were presenting that, my Senate chief author was calling at the same time, so apparently he wanted to weigh in, but I didn't take the call.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler.
I hate to monopolize the meeting, but that's also my amendment. I think this is technical. And this was brought to me by some people who thought the language needed just clarifying. It's meant to be friendly. I don't know if the authors had a chance to look at this and decide that it's technical. I think the advice of staff was to do a delete all. I think two-thirds of the definitions are the same, and maybe Ms. Committer, somebody else wants to come and testify about this. And whether it gets done here or somewhere else, I'm bringing this forward as an effort to clarify the terms. It doesn't involve any funding.
Mr. Chair. Quite frankly, I wasn't tracking what this amendment was designed to do. So if it can be better explained, I think it left out at least a term or two. But
Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Commit could come and describe it.
Representative,
could Ms. Commit come down and testify to the
Ms. Commit
this amendment? Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, and to Representative Abler's amendment. This language is taken. The changes proposed in the A-172 amendment actually reflect what is written in the ACA and use those definitions. And for example, under on line 1.9, health plan. It refers back to existing statutory definition rather than creating a new definition that says health benefit plan, which would only complicate matters for both the legislature and the rest of the state going forward in future years to try to understand what is a health plan and what is a health benefit plan. So this this amendment basically reflects existing statutory language and matches it up. What it doesn't do in this amendment is that it doesn't make the corrections then throughout the rest of the bill, and so it probably needs an additional sentence that says that.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Abler. Why don't we, if it's all right with the author, consider this a starting point for some more discussion where it, I don't know that it needs to be made in this committee per se, and it I note we're also missing the word or the definition for insurance producer. Maybe that was intentional, maybe it wasn't, but I think I get where you're going and trying to have some consistency and send a message that people will understand when they read this legislation, yeah. And I agree with that intent. I just don't know that we're quite here yet with the amendment.
Mr. Chair, and
Representative Abler.
I mean, you look at the timestamps on all these, and there obviously work's been going on, and I'm totally, this is... I think technical, and I think on that basis, I'm willing to withdraw it. And then, the people bringing it forward, I think, have a good point, and I hear a good working inkle here. So, if I'll withdraw it, and then we can at a later committee, at least it was broached in the health committee area, which is what I'm trying to do is get all these topics addressed ahead of time so they can be germane to a Ways and Means Amendment or taxes.
Representative Abler and Atkins, Ms. Commit did say that she needed some other things in here, and it looks to me like this is just clarification. So if you two can work on that, or the three of you, and I don't know if we do it on the House floor or probably not in taxes, I would guess.
And Mr. Chair, I want to, for the sake of the record, I want to indicate that I'm not interested, I don't think Representative Abler or Ms. Commit are, in making any substantive changes to those terms. It would simply be technical and clarifying. And I say that out of respect for this committee and other committees that it's been to. That's not the intention of the author. I don't think it's the intention of the author of the amendment.
Yeah. Representative Loeffler, did you have a comment here?
No, Mr. Chair, we can work on it as it proceeds.
Thank you. So Representative Abler withdraws the A-172, and that brings us to A-173. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, again, here I go. You think I'd be a senator, you know? I'd like to move to A-173.
Representative Abler moves A-173, and I'm just reminded of something that Tom Rukavina once said, that if you gave senators a white wig and a black robe, they would wear it. But your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's really nice that Senate jokes always work in the House. So, Mr. Chair, and I think at the end of the day, I'm uncomfortable with just carte blanche authority being given to boards or the MMB. And so the Senate's onto something. I don't think they've got it quite right here, but at least they're closer to where I want it to go. And I would hope that there's some way to get a more public process, including rulemaking and others. So. This is obviously a work in progress. I'd like to hear the author's view on rulemaking versus fiat.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I would point out Chair Liebling and Representative Mack and the effort that they made in the last committee. I think we're actually better with what we currently have in the language now. We did start out with a complete exemption from the rulemaking process. And as a result of efforts in past committees on a bipartisan basis, I think we're much closer now to where we want to be, which is now we have a 60-day, so it's actually longer than the 21-day in the first part of your amendment, but it's shorter than the 6 months. And the reason we need it to be a little bit shorter is just to respond to what the market may demand of us in terms of whether it's additional guidance for navigators or whatever the case may be, or an opportunity to market a plan in a particular area of the state. But it really wasn't my effort as much as it was Representative Max and Chair Liebling's in the past committee. That 60 days now, there's plenty of public comment. In fact, now up until between that committee and this one, I've not heard any more negatives about what we put in. So I think we might be getting close to something that works, also provides for considerable public comment, and then a 30-day posting so that people are aware of what's going into effect before it actually goes into effect. But I think that's closer to where we want to be than where the Senate is now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I think one of the marks of good leaders to admit when they were maybe wrong, you know, like Rosanna Dana, never mind. But this will give you an opportunity, at least for helps the author as he's discussing with the Senate that we didn't like his idea, so the Senate's idea. So I'll withdraw the rulemaking.
Representative Abler withdraws the A-173 amendment. And just for the members to understand, we have to pass this before we go on Easter vacation, which is like the 21st, 22nd of March. Because if we don't pass it and the governor doesn't sign it by the end of March, we will have a federal exchange. And that means, and then the plans have to be offering their new plans in the exchange by October 1st, which means, it seems to me the governor's going to have to point that board within 2 or 3 weeks after he signs the bill. They're going to have to set up their procedures. They're going to have to start doing the certification process, because the plans are going to need to know what they have to do probably in June in order to get ready for the October 1st deadline. So we don't have a lot of time. And the board's not going to have a lot of time. And if we just lived by the rulemaking process, it would never get done for this first year. After that, we can debate about how the rules should be done, but for the first time, we just don't have enough time to do what we usually do with rules. Next, we have the A-174 amendment. Representative Abler.
Yeah, we're not offering that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so that's not being offered. The A-175.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
That's mine. this is the active purchaser discussion. And actually, I like that earlier amendment. I think they've persuaded me that we should have all the providers in the state that want to comply with all the rules and frameworks. But that's not this amendment. Mr. Chair, the point of this is to get companies to want to sell in this exchange. And who would think, the 500,000 people that want some business, they would just all flock and they would just take their limitless funds to create a product and achieve whatever standards the Commerce Department requires, achieve whatever standards the Exchange Board has created on top of it, which could be loss ratio standards and other things they might make up that they deem to be valuable. They can't negotiate costs, though. People need to remember that. Some of my friends in the audience, or at least outside, think that they can bargain for price, but they can't. This isn't what is that, price line where they can make a bid. They have to just take the it's more like Expedia, right? Never mind. Sorry, Representative Atkins. But anyway, so if you go to all the work of achieving commerce compliance and achieve compliance with all of the standards that the Exchange Board has added that are beyond the normal Minnesota standards, if you don't let people bring their plan in, you might get people not asking. And it's a fair amount of expense in the multi-millions. And so that's the point of this. I don't think active purchase gets you where you want. And I would inquire about the author's view today.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, today, as you asked for my opinion today, I've done all kinds of different analogies. This is the active selector method is actually one that starts in May or June of each year. when about, 400 different people, in 2012 anyway, filed for office. They worked really hard. They spent a lot of money. They went door to door. They asked for support, and then in November, voters got to pick which ones were the very, very best. It's not a perfect system, but any time that you have a narrowing where the selector gets to choose a limited number, you end up with the possibility for better better representatives in this plan. And so the active purchaser piece of it, or the active, it's actually technically better called the active selector, because we're not purchasing anything. But when there's a narrowing where you're only going to pick from, you know, if there's 20 plans and you're only going to pick four or five, folks are going to work really, really hard to put their best foot forward. And I see now, now my mom wants to weigh in, so perhaps she's watching at home and can tell me whether today I'm wrong or not. But that's why we've got that active selector. And if there's a better way to get at that and get the most affordable, best value, best quality, good adequate networks, I'm all ears. But right now, that's I think a pretty good swing for the swing at the fences in terms of what we're trying to get.
Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. I was just looking for I was reading. I got to quit reading blogs, but there was somebody wrote an article about this. I'm not a big blog reader, just so I don't have to argue about that. I can't find it, but there was a discussion with Ms. Johansson was on interviewed on one of the newspapers and did, I think, a very commendable discussion. And some of the people were commenting, and some of the people who were fans of, you know. You can tell the thought process of some of the writers, but even one of these writers who was not of my political persuasion, I deemed, thought that that insurance companies were a bunch of fat cats and they just were, you know, they had cigars and caviar and that was kind of their tone. But even they said that if you hit all these new criteria, well, they should probably be allowed to sell. So, on behalf of this guy, I'm just having one more thought. I don't know if we want to talk about this very long, Mr. Chair. This is a big, big deal. And I want to remind us that we learned in different hearings that there's going to be two national plans coming in that are going to get to come. And I don't know who picks them, but it's not going to be the board. It's really interesting for me when I get to defend the health plans, because I spent my professional career trying to survive the health plans. And I've had bills that they haven't always supported and will yet again. Maybe even this year, just to kind of help them. But these are Minnesota companies. These are Minnesota jobs. These are Minnesota people in general serving us. And they're, by and large, nonprofit. You know, they're officially nonprofit, but we wonder what they do with their excess money sometimes, and we keep pounding on that. But these are good Minnesota companies that employ thousands of Minnesota people. And if we don't allow these companies to have a chance to develop a product that they're going to sell to other Minnesotans, and then we allow two national companies to come in that are for-profit. And actually, I'm arguing on the other side of the interstate purchasing. We have changed sides, Representative Atkins, so on that. But so we want to be careful about that. And so be aware. And if I don't know if the chair wants to discuss this topic anymore, at some point I'm going to withdraw it. But what's your pleasure, Mr. Chair? Have you had enough of this discussion?
Representative Grunhagen has.
Okay.
I don't know if it's on this or.
Yeah. What's your pleasure, Mr. Chair? Have you had enough of this discussion?
Representative Grunhagen has.
Okay.
I don't know if it's on this or.
Yeah.
I've commented on this before, but one additional thought is, Representative Atkins, I do think that, and I don't want to be too helpful here, but.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah. I, you know, but just from a market standpoint, a larger amount of choices is going to spread your risk adjustment better in the exchange. If you have too narrow of a number of choices, okay, you have the greater the chance of concentrating your bad health in a few plans and having adverse selection out of that. By having a wider variety in choice, you've got a better chance of spreading that risk over several different companies or plans rather than allowing the concentration with too few of choices. And I just throw that out for food for thought for you, because one of the things that we saw in the Massachusetts plan is that the bad health tend to concentrate in just a few plans, and that created adverse selection. Now, I know there's a risk adjuster in there to try to mediate some of that. But one of the best ways to mediate it is to give a wide variety of choices of plans. And so just I'm throwing that out for food for thought.
Okay. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to speak in support of Representative Abler's amendment. And Representative Atkins, under your scenario that a candidate can campaign and knock on doors and go in parades and then is selected as the best of the best, that may be true, but under this scenario, it's just a few select folks that are going to select those insurance companies that have an opportunity to participate. So in your scenario, it's like saying just a few select will be able to choose our governor or a state rep or president. And I think that's a narrow view of what Representative Abler's amendment will do. This opens up the exchange. It opens up the free market. And I know that some constituents and businessmen and women in my district and in my city would love to participate. And they'll certainly spend the money and the time and the effort to qualify and to be certified. And for a small independent businessman, as you know, because you're a smart businessman yourself, it takes a lot of time and resources. And then to be completely excluded and not have even the opportunity. So I think that Representative Abler, I hope you don't withdraw it, give an opportunity to vote in favor of businesses and open up the free market would be very necessary. And I just hope that you don't withdraw it, because I'm going to vote yes for it.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question coming off of Representative Abler's comments when he was talking about Minnesota companies in the exchange. I didn't see anywhere in here, maybe I missed it, saying that only Minnesota companies can apply to be in the exchange. Is there a can I get a clarification? Does that mean that it's just Minnesota companies that can apply, or is it open to companies that can, are insurance companies from across the nation that can then apply to be programs in the exchange?
Well, I can.
Whoever has
apply.
That.
The question is, they still have to meet the requirements of, first of all, with our Commerce Department, and second of all, the certification standards that the health that the exchange sets up, and we do have to actually. There'll be at least, I believe, two federal plans of federal employees get that have to be offered through the exchange, so those are obviously national ones. And we do have national insurance companies. Aetna sells in Minnesota, Family Insurance sells in Minnesota, so we already have non-Minnesota companies selling insurance. Representative Abler.
And just a comment, and I agree with the chair, but I know for sure in Minnesota, I'm sure that Blue Cross is going to apply no matter what we do, and I'm sure that Health Partners will, and Medica, I've not talked to them, but I would predict that they will. They're large enough to have economies of scale. Preferred One and UCARE are at risk. They would like to apply. The 3.5% price is really a problem for UCARE. They have no place to shift it. So it has to come right out of their operations, which is probably one of the leanest in the state. They've actually given money back. Preferred One is small, but they would like to develop a product, but it's going to cost them several million dollars to do that, and they don't have that kind of money laying around. And these national companies, which nothing wrong with success, they have lots of capital, lots and lots of capital. And so $5 million for them to put a plan together, that's like pocket change. So I just didn't want to deprive our good ones that have proved the test of time by serving our Medicaid populations and weathered the storm. Right, just lately, we've consolidated down to three airline carriers. You know, I don't want to consolidate down to three Minnesota ones only and then two wither. And I want to draw more in, plus the two that might come. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I know we don't want to beat on this too long, but this is kind of one of the central issues as we're talking about an exchange. And as I've said before, the Republicans were able to do this in the last 2 years. They could have had the bill of their dreams, and they did not move a bill. So, you know, here we are. But I just want to respond to this idea that it's really a terrible thing for plans to have to spend money to develop a product and then have it not be selected. What I want to say about that is that's kind of the way things work in the free market. Now, I know this isn't a free market, but anybody that's out there developing a product puts in money knowing that that product might not sell. So I don't think this is anything horrible that we're, oh my gosh, the plans might have to spend some money and then have it go down the drain. Just the same way, you can run for office, raise money, spend your whole summer, do everything, sacrifice your career to running for office, and by golly, the voters don't pick you. I mean, there are just some things in life that if you want to gain, you got to put in a little effort. Secondly, I think that it's important here that the exchange have flexibility, and we've worked hard to give the exchange some flexibility, and that's so that if things don't work out, they can change course. If they set standards and find that nobody's applying or nobody meets those standards, they can change those standards to make sure that this works for consumers. So it's very important to me that we keep the active purchaser language. I think it's very important for consumers in this state, and that's all I have to say, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Norton.
I hate to go right after my colleague from Rochester, but I guess I'm going to. I just would like the chair to know that I do have concerns about this particular section. So you have some bipartisan encouragement to continue looking at this particular section, and I know I'm not alone. I think Representative Liebling is true that this has to be successful. There are too many people out there counting on us to do this right. And so I guess I'm just going to suggest to you that while Representative Abler is going to remove this particular proponent, that you keep in mind that you have some support for looking further at this from some of your colleagues on both sides of the aisle, and that we look to making certain, even if it's a phased-in effort, but that we allow plans to come in that meet a high standard so that consumers do have a choice.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we don't need to spend too much time on this, but I really do think that the active selector is just a really key issue. And it's not just about consumer choice, which I think people have been talking about. It's also about the exchange is the only place in which people will have access to premium assistance, which is taxpayer-paid assistance in meeting their health insurance premiums. And I think, as such, it has a higher standard for making sure that those taxes that all of us contribute into the federal government are used on quality plans that have proven their ability to have good outcomes. And I fully expect that this board will establish objective, fair criteria according to the goals that are outlined in this legislation so that it doesn't really limit the marketplace unduly, but assures the public, including those who are just taxpayers into the system and won't get the benefit of premium assistance or medical assistance or the other things, that their monies are invested in quality programs that in health insurance plans that have good outcomes for those consumers. And so I think it's an important role, and one that I think the public expects of us.
Representative Abler, do you wish to withdraw your
175? Yes, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Abler withdraws the 175 amendment. Next week, Representative Mack has a comment question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In line with what Representative Norton said, certainly don't want to go against a fellow colleague, but I guess I just feel like this is an important enough issue, Mr. Chair, and I don't exactly know what rules are put out in terms of amendments or doing something like this, but I'd like to reoffer the A-175 amendment.
Yeah, you can do that.
I'm not a parliamentarian, but I think that's probably in order. So Representative Mack moves the A-175 amendment. And
Mr. Chair?
Does anybody wish to speak? Representative Mack, why don't you just give a very brief then?
Sure. I'll be quick. And, Mr. Chair, thank you for your latitude. You run a fair committee. I really do appreciate it. And I think we heard it echoed from both sides that this is a very important issue. And in health policy, we had a rigorous debate about comparing this issue to anything from soup, and I made the issue of the cell phone market. But I think one of the points to be made, Mr. Chair, is that, yes, We certainly want to do what's best for the consumer, and yes, insurance is incredibly complicated at times to understand, but as I understand it, we're investing millions into a navigator program to have people on board to help consumers navigate this, and in-person assisters. There's a few different levels of help that consumers can get in order to navigate this, and plans do jump through quite a few of hoops in order to satisfy what commerce requires of them, what the federal government requires of them. And so I don't understand why we would want to narrow the options that consumers have. And I heard the author say, in essence, that less options equals a better deal for the consumer. And I guess I would just have to say I disagree with that statement. I think in almost all situations, more options are a better deal for those investing their money into important issues such as insurance or buying something for their home or whatever the case might be. So with that, Mr. Chair, I really do appreciate it, and I would ask for a roll call.
Okay. The roll call has been called. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that for the same reasons that I iterated with respect to Representative Abler's amendment, I would still oppose the proposed A175 amendment. My concern is that, frankly, it just all in all, doing away with it, I don't necessarily think that accomplishes what even Representative Abler is hoping to accomplish. It may be what Representative Mack, and perhaps that's why she reoffered it. But for members like Representative Norton and Representative Abler and other members of this committee who have expressed some concern about the active selector piece, I don't think this quite goes there either, just all in all doing away with it. If left to further efforts, we may be able to figure something out, but if it simply goes away, I think most of the opportunity to negotiate something that works for all sides might go away with it. So I, for a number of reasons, including those, would oppose the amendment.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard a phrase a couple of times that I just wanted to shed a little bit more light in, and that is the talk about how increasing competition is going to bring us lower premiums. And I think that we need to make some clarifications about what kind of plans are being offered in the exchange. We're not creating a state self-insured plan that the state is going to assume the risk. We're creating a number. There's going to be created a number of fully insured plans for individuals and small businesses. And so the plans are going to be assuming that risk. Knowing that, the broader the risk pool, the better. And that's been proven time and time again in other states that essentially there's a limit to the number of plans that can be offered in states because you end up kind of cannibalizing the healthy people and taking all the healthy people into one small pool as opposed to spreading the risk more broadly with a larger risk pool. And so I just think it's important that we make that distinction between what a fully insured health insurance market looks like versus a self-insured. It's very different, and a lot of us are in self-insured programs, and so we understand that a lot better. But those folks who are buying in the fully insured market, it's different market rules apply there. So I just wanted to put that out there for some clarification.
Okay. Any other comments? Then Norton, Representative Norton.
Thank you, and Representative Mack, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, but I do have the same concern as Representative Atkins. I want this changed, but I don't think removing the whole section and leaving a huge void is the answer. And so I think I'm tempting right now to vote with Representative Atkins as the bill's author, but I am saying that, looking him very sternly in the eye, saying, I hope you continue to look at making the appropriate, what I think are appropriate changes to the bill. But I'll support your wishes now because I don't want to create a void. I think this board has a point and purpose, and so I just hope it continues to change, and we'll be watching for that.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Representative Mack.
And just one final statement. I do echo what Representative Norton says, just in hopes, however this vote turns out, that there is some issues addressed with this. This amendment has been offered, I think, in all five or six committees or however it's been, and haven't seen a whole lot change yet, and maybe the day just hasn't come, but I know we'll all anxiously await that. And again, I guess I'll just leave it on the note that we ask plans to go through a lot of things to pass requirements and put good products on the market. And I just don't see how letting the exchange create one more area for them to set a new set of rules really, really helps the consumers of Minnesota. So with that, I ask for your support, members.
This is one of the key issues. I think there's three big issues on this bill. One is the active selector. Secondly is how we're going to pay for this. And the third is the exchange board and what the conflict of interest there. But this is a very controversial issue, and in my mind, there's really no good solution yet. With that, the clerk will call the roll.
Huntley.
No.
Norton. Abler.
Pass and come back to me.
Allen.
No.
Dean.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Fritz.
No.
Grunhagen.
Yes.
Halverson.
No.
Portman.
No.
Lane.
No.
Liebling.
No.
Loeffler.
No.
Mack.
Yes.
McDonald.
Yes.
Moran.
No.
Newton.
No.
Schumacher.
Yes.
Zerwas.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Norton.
I'd like to just change my vote to just a pass at this time, if I could, please. I like Representative Abler's message.
So Norton changes your vote to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be 11 ayes, 6 ayes, and 2 passes. The motion is does not prevail. The amendment does not pass. Okay. Go on to 149, which is Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just grab that. I believe this is the one that just implements a suggestion of the Department of Human Services. The original, in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, we tried to clarify the public health program language that was in the original definitions to say exchange enrollment, and they came up with, I think, a better description, which is the MAGI public health programs, because that is really what distinguishes the public health enrollees in the exchange versus all others, and that's that their eligibility is determined by modified adjusted gross income, and that's further explained in the content of the bill, even though you don't see that in the amendment itself. And with that, I'd urge people's support and answer any questions.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, and any amendment that brings the MAGI into my bill, I am fully in support of. I believe it's just technical and it makes a lot of sense.
She didn't move the amendment.
Representative Loeffler, I've been informed you did not move your amendment.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was trying to look through my stacks to find it, and I forgot. I would move the A-149 amendment.
So the amendment has been discussed. So all those in favor of the A-149 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 149 is adopted. And members, we're going to go till close to 12, I think. Let's see here. Next is the A-150, and I would move the A-150 amendment, and Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an author's amendment, and I appreciate the chair moving it. Just notes that one of the members appointed under paragraph A, clauses 1 and 2, should have some experience in representing the needs of vulnerable populations and persons with disabilities. I heard this from a lot of folks. I consider it simply an oversight in the original drafting, and I think this language goes to a spot where many, many members, I haven't heard really any opposition to making sure that we have somebody on the board who can speak to the needs of people with invulnerable populations. and folks with disabilities. So I'd appreciate a positive vote.
Any discussion? Well, this is where we spend our money, too, so it's good to have somebody that understands that. All those in favor of the A-150 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A-150 amendment is adopted, and next is the 151. And, what does this do? I know that's me. Oh, this just clarifies. I would move the A-151 amendment. This simply says that if we have the 3.5% withhold, that is not going to be used to help pay for the part of the exchange that's dealing with medical assistance. So that medical assistance will basically have to pay for its administrative costs within the exchange. Any discussion of that?
That's a good one, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of the A-151 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the A-151 is adopted. Next we have the A-152 amendment, Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A-152 amendment. To me, the health insurance exchange is a way for purchasing insurance. The goal, in my view, is to have a clean way for all consumers to buy insurance and have access to health care. I see the board as representing the consumers. I don't see it as primarily a way to represent health plan companies who now and will continue to sell insurance. So, yes, we need to make the exchange workable for them as a marketplace, but the goal is being a marketplace that serves consumers, in my view. The health plans already have the greater power, I think, in this world of health insurance, and hence the need, as I see it, for a strong conflict of interest provisions for those on the board. Though selling insurance shouldn't be regulating or establishing their own marketplace. Now, in further discussions, the need for this concern to be balanced by a level of understanding and expertise has come up, although I don't think that you're going to forget your expertise in 1 year. But I'm actually working in my hometown with a nonprofit that's gotten itself into a bit of difficulty due to having boards over the years didn't have enough understanding and expertise of the business side of the mission. So, hence, I'm willing to speak here to my concern for a strong conflict of interest provisions in this bill, but I'll withdraw this amendment to increase it to 5 years.
Representative Lane withdraws the A-152 amendment. Next, we have the A-153 amendment. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was that the MSHA one?
Mm-hmm. Which one
A-153. Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't know if there's two amendments to this. The other MSHA one I'm not going to be offering. The concern is people who have, in the bill, it's quite clear that MSHA is going to be terminated. And and they didn't quite mean that it would just be zeroed out like overnight. But there's some people that have autism, AIDS, and I think dialysis that are especially concerned about what happens to those individuals because of there's no limit on lifetime and there's no limit on pre-existing, but some of the plans are going to have limits on how much they can actually spend on some of these very chronic conditions, and MSHA has filled a very important role with that. And so this language that I wrote in concert with Commerce, and I think the MSHA board had a piece of this, just says that they're going to talk about eventual appropriate termination of coverage, which is a much softer way to talk about, they'll analyze the need. It doesn't imply a certain abolition of MSHA, but at least it will talk about soft landing these, and I hope the chair can, hope the author can accept this.
Representative Atkins.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Abler's efforts. This is an improvement in the bill, and I support the amendment, and certainly this is a reflection of what folks are hoping for, is to have, we don't want to leave anybody behind when MSHA does eventually sunset. We don't want to have there be any gaps or leave anybody behind when that occurs. And I think this is definitely improved language to what's currently in the bill. Thank you.
Well, Representative Abler, you probably ought to move this amendment then.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd like to move the A-153, Mr. Chair.
Next we have Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at the amendment and the language in the bill that it replaces, and I'm not seeing a lot of difference here. I think I'm just seeing that the amendment adds the words that the Commissioner of Commerce and the MSHA board have the authority to develop the need for and implement the phase out. And I just wanted to ask Representative Abler if he would just be really clear about what the difference is here. I know I'm missing something.
Thank you.
Representative Abler.
Chair, Representative Liebling. It is substantive, although it's subtle. If you look on line 14.29 of the bill, it talks about develop and implement the phase out and eventual termination of coverage, and that's a certainty. I think the word that's meaningful is appropriate, and appropriate gives a lot of comfort to people that there'll be a process. And so, where do these individuals go? Who will serve them? Will a plan evolve that they can be in? And it gives a little possible loophole that maybe some of these folks have to hang around a little bit in MCHA-like coverage or some other reinsurance pool. So that's the difference.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Abler. I guess I understand your concern, and I think we all share that concern. We don't want to dump anybody who has this very important coverage, obviously, and we want a smooth transition. I guess I don't object. I just don't really see what adding the word appropriate really does, because they already have the authority under the bill to develop and implement the phase out, and I don't see that if the word appropriate isn't in the statute here, I don't see that they would do it inappropriately. So I don't really see that this is doing a lot, but I certainly don't object to it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the A-153 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that amendment is adopted. And next we have the A-154 amendment, Representative Loeffler. She's here. Oh, she stepped out, so we'll go on to the A-155 amendment, Representative Liebling.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, which one are we on?
155.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A-155 amendment. And members, this is actually very close to what is in the Senate bill. And I worked on this with a representative of the brokers to get at some of the concerns that I had about how the disclosure piece was going to work. And this was discussed in the policy committee kind of on the fly, and the amendment I had then didn't quite work for the brokers. So this is language, as I say, that is in the Senate bill for the most part, with minor tweak in the very last sentence. But I believe that the brokers are fine with this, and Mr. Sposetto is here, I think, or was going to be here to speak to this if need be. But I would ask members to support the amendment.
Did she move it?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, Mr. Sposetto. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dominic Sposetto. I represent the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform. This is language that we have had the opportunity to work out with Representative Liebling, and I think is probably appropriate for agents and producers involved in the process in terms of what they disclose to individuals who are coming to them for assistance in the exchange, and we do support the amendment.
Any questions for Mr. Sposetto? I don't see any. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the A-155 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, signify by saying no. The A-155 amendment is adopted. And now we're going back to the A-154, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A-154 amendment. And what this does is it provides that no revenue-raising effort shall anyway advantage any specific health plan, carrier, or insurance producer in the business of the marketplace. And so as they're developing revenue plans, it has to be ways that don't advantage any one particular part of this, and it also deletes then the language that authorizes advertising revenue. As a result, because you don't really want people to go to what is supposed to be a trustworthy, objective comparison tool on the web and have it right away be banner ads, excuse me for losing my voice, banner ads for a particular insurer.
Okay, Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, I guess just a question. I want to make sure that I'm reading it right. I and if I talk long enough, perhaps Representative Loeffler will
we'll
be able
get
to get
voice
it.
Back.
my question is: would the American Cancer Society or the McKnight Foundation or somebody other than a health benefit plan, health carrier, or insurance producer be able to still advertise? Because I know there are a lot of folks supported advertising as a potential source of revenue. On both sides, consumer groups, Chamber of Commerce, Friday folks supported it. I understand where this amendment's going, and if it's solely just those with an economic interest, perhaps that makes sense, but I just want to make sure we don't exclude others.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, well, my understanding is that this would probably be a pretty small amount of revenue, but that even if you were to allow the Cancer Society to take an ad, that might influence people's evaluation of their cancer risk as they're choosing insurance as opposed to their risk for some other things. And so, I mean, I just really see this as sort of the Consumer's Report, you know, website by which people are asked, you know, basic questions about what do they value. Do they value access to a particular provider? Do they most value price? Those sorts of things is what we understand will be the decision-making tool, and I just don't see the need for advertising on the website. If there are other opportunities for advertising elsewhere, I don't have an objection to that, but I think it shouldn't be influencing how people evaluate their options. And I think the most important thing to the consumers and the uninsured and small businesses really adopting this as a trusted place is establishing that trust. And I think they really just want to believe that when they go to this, they're getting objective sight. And the more objective information, I think the more it looks like a trusted, objective source of information rather than just another site with advertising, I think it will build that trust. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any other questions.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, my only concern is that we start to maybe run into some First Amendment problems when the government tells people where they can advertise and what the content of their advertisements can be, and because this is got so much governmental involvement in the setup, I just wonder if we might get into a situation where we have some constitutional issues.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By deleting advertising revenue, we avoid all those issues because we're not limiting who can or can't advertise. We're just saying advertising revenue is not a provision. The language about no revenue-raising effort can advantage one particular carrier provider is just to say, as they're developing other revenue streams, they have to make sure that it's not, you know, one insurer gets to give more money proportionately than another and might be advantaged in showing up first on a screen or something like that.
Well, can I just ask? Thank you, Mr. Chair. A follow-up question then. So is it your intention that there be no banner ads or anything like that on the site?
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's my intention, so that it looks like a very objective source of information which to weigh a lot of very serious options with a decision-making backup that's designed by the exchange.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Hartman.
I just have a concern about going down that path because I don't know to what extent people were looking at that as a potential source of revenue to fund this this piece of software. I mean, I'm open to more conversation. I think there's some issues that need to be discussed.
Okay, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess Representative Loeffler and Representative Adkins, as we're talking about advertising and revenue, and yet the discussion you're talking about has to do with banners. One might endorse a product without revenue being involved. And if you can still do endorsements and have banners about endorsements, that isn't getting to what you're talking about. So I guess if the American Cancer Society endorses certain products, are we going to allow banners for endorsements? Because then it kind of contradicts what you're talking about. And I don't know the answer to these questions, but just because revenue is or isn't brought in, the endorsement issue might still be a problem. So I guess I don't know if this has been thought through all the way or not. I guess I'm just thinking there's more questions as I think about this longer.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I'd like to divide the amendment between line 1.3 and 1.4. I'd like to speak to that.
Go ahead, Mr. Abler.
Thank you. I'd like to talk about 1.4 to 1.6 first, and I have a technical amendment I'd like to, maybe the author can take as friendly. I think that we don't want to use this revenue as a way to advantage any particular person. I like the one-year waiting time for people afterward and all that, and I think that we maybe agree that this advertising shouldn't advantage somebody. And so, Representative Loeffler, if you could, I think if you just delete in any way, you might get a de minimis benefit where they're getting some minor benefit that it's irrelevant. But if you said no revenue raising efforts shall advantage any specific health benefit plan, et cetera, I think you're onto something there, and this could be crafted throughout the process, and I would support that then. And I think then you don't need the first half, because already these services and advertising revenue can't benefit anybody. I think if you're going to take away revenue of advertising, it may be a significant funding stream, and the money you don't get is going to fall on the back of the small businesses who would have been relieved maybe even a percent of the cost. I think it's friendly to your effort, but I'd like to hear what you think about my proposed amendment to line 1.4 and 5 and what you think about that part, please.
Representative Atkins.
No, he's laughing.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
The author of the amendment.
The author of the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Abler. I would be glad to incorporate the dropping of it in any way, because I think that those words don't add anything. I agree. I do think there is a difference, and I did not see advertising revenue in the 46-page fiscal note, although I have to say it might have been on a line that I didn't catch. I don't see this as an issue to start with. And maybe this is something that the board can advise on, but I don't know that we should put it intentionally into their fiscal plan at this point. And I really do think that to the consumer, it does look different if you go to a website that has lots of banner advertising and flashing sort of things, as opposed to if it doesn't. And in terms of their feeling like this is an objective source of information, and you know, it may be just sort of an impression, but I think it does make a difference. And so I'm still somewhat partial to saying I don't think advertising revenue should be a major basis on which to fund this. And I know that we'll probably hear more as we move along about what the long-term financial projections are of this, but I don't think we need to address it right now because it's not in the fiscal plan as I understand it.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I believe the author amendment was willing to accept that amendment my oral amendment.
Right. I incorporated the dropping of in any way on lines 1.4 and 1.15, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Abler has moved to divide the amendment, so we'll have to vote on.
Right. And I'm prepared to vote on that whenever you
Representative Atkins, you had a comment.
Mr. Chair, sounds that second portion, 1.4 to 1.6, makes sense to me.
Okay, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could Mr. Chung just repeat then what the amendment now will read?
Mr. Chung.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, on line 1.4, you would delete in any, and on line 1.5, delete way.
Okay, any further discussion on lines 1.4 to 1.6? All those in favor of lines 1.4 to 1.6 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
So those three lines are adopted, and next we have 1.1 to 1.3.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I think that we're going down a path that could be a little risky, and I would encourage Representative Loeffler to withdraw that and talk to the same people that are calling me. Other people might call her about this advertising thing. But she can do what she wants, but I'm just speaking against the first half.
Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Ms. Malmov has any comment on this or anybody else from the exchange, because I'd kind of like to know what the plan is for advertising or how much revenue is expected from this, to Representative Abler's point.
Does somebody from the exchange wish to talk on this? Welcome back.
Mr. Chair, April Todd-Momlev with the exchange. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the advertising revenue, we haven't included any revenue in the fiscal note. It's there as an option for the board that they can exercise. It doesn't say in the language that they have to raise revenue, which is why it's not, or raise revenue through advertising, which is why it's not in the fiscal note. It could be a source over time if the board chose to utilize that it could reduce the withhold percentage over time. In terms of the amount of that, you know, we don't really have significant, you know, estimates of what that amount would be. The only thing that I'd add is, as a result of the financing work group under the Exchange Advisory Task Force, they did recommend that this could be a mechanism for raising revenue.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Todd-Malmov, the fact that we've now adopted half of this amendment, which appears to me to really pretty much put the kibosh on advertising anyway. I think that's what Representative Abler was kind of getting at. I may be misunderstanding him, but do you kind of agree with that? Does it, do you have an opinion then about, it sounds like you're not anxious to have us pass the first part, but it sounds like passing the second part might have kind of stopped the sort of advertising that would raise money from the plans, for instance.
Yeah. Mr. Todd-Momlev.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, as I'm reading the language, it would seem to prevent advertising by a particular health plan or carrier or insurance producer, but I don't read this to limit the ability, for example, for the Heart Association or the Cancer Society to with Heart Health Month to, you know, have a banner, for example, on the site. I wouldn't see that as restricting that.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Malmoff. And Representative Loeffler, was it your intention to also stop? Then I guess I wasn't really clear about this. Did you intend to stop that kind of advertising as well from the Heart Association or a group like that?
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, my thought was that we shouldn't have banner advertising in general on the site, because I think it does convey a different sort of level of seriousness to the person who's using the site, which is to apply for medical assistance, to apply for premium assistance tax credits, to apply for insurance for themselves or their employees. And, you know, that's a pretty serious decision. And I think that, you know, if we had Yoplait ads or or ads for somebody's, you know, latest computer game or whatever, I mean, I just, you know, I think there's some issues to me about just putting advertising on, even if it's a revenue source. And I just really would like, if the board ultimately decides it needs this as a revenue source, that it come back with a plan and some policies related to that. I don't see that they need this money in the first year's operation. We've provided in the bill for other operational money. I just don't think it should be designed with this as a significant source at this point.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I see on the page 13 of the fiscal note for marketing and outreach for fiscal year 15, there's $1.5 million, $1,500,000, and then fiscal year 16 and 17 is a total of $3 million for marketing and advertising through direct mail, social media, and communications and promotions. Although I have several issues on concerns with the bill itself, Representative Atkins, I do like the portion that allows companies the ability to promote themselves and to raise money. As Representative Abler said, we really don't know how this is going to be funded there's a big lot of questions to be answered. And Representative Loeffler, not only are you in favor of limiting the number of businesses that can participate in the market, now you're going to restrict them for even have the capability of marketing their product and the state creating revenue to pay for the darn thing. So I would vote no for this amendment. I think it's a good idea that we let businesses advertise. That's what they do best, many things, is advertise. And if they are willing, not forced to pay a 4.5% tax to us, they're willing to spend their money to advertise on their product and a banner on the website, and we can have the ability to create some revenue to help pay for at least the marketing, which is $3 million a year, I think it would be a very wise thing to do. So I would ask that you withdraw your amendment, because it creates the inability to raise money to fund this whole thing in the first place. We want to promote businesses to promote their business, and that's what the least we could do for them. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Loeffler.
Well, at this point, since it's going to be going through two more finance committees, I'm willing to withdraw to get a little better sense of understanding. My understanding is you don't really make a lot of money off those banners. And if it's a really de minimis part of the financing, I think there is a legitimate issue here. But it doesn't seem like anyone that the exchange yet has even an estimate of what this might be. And if it's, I think that would help inform the discussion.
Representative Loeffler, are you withdrawing 1.2,
I am
withdrawing the whole thing?
The A-154 lines 1.2 is my understanding. Mr. Chen can correct this. I think this is actually just a correction in the original drafting. Is that correct?
Mr. Chen.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, I think you would have to withdraw both 1.2 and 1.3. They are related.
Okay. Then I withdraw the division of 1.2 and 1.3.
Okay. So, but we are not withdrawing line 1.1.
That's correct. Well, we adopted the second half, yep. And we did so, when we divided it.
Representative Loeffler withdraws lines 1.2, 1.3, and what we're left with then is 1.1, 1.4, 1.5 as amended, and 1.6. We've already adopted 1.4, 1.5, and 1.6 as amended, so now what we are left with is line 1.1.
No.
Yes?
We can vote on it.
Well, then we'd have to do the whole, huh?
That's just the most.
Well, we can. Mr. Chun, you can tell us. do we have to vote on line 1.1?
Mr. Chair, I think you've already adopted 1.4 through 1.6 in the division. I mean, you could, just to be safe, adopt, you know, with A-154 as amended without lines 2 and 3. Just put that on the record.
No, okay, why don't we do that? We're going to change the motion, and it will be, we're going to adopt the A-154 amendment minus lines 1.2 and 1.3, and there was an amendment on 1.4 and 1.5 in which we removed in any way. So, all those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
So, the amendment is adopted. Next, we have 156, it looks like. Where am I going?
You.
156, I think, is what I've got next.
Mr. Chair, I would be glad to move the A-156 amendment. this is
no offer.
And this is an amendment that we considered in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee and withdrew to work and get a little more insight and impact in language out from the state agencies and others affected by it. And I do have one suggested oral amendment, which is on line 1.11. At the end of the sentence, it says may make. And we think it would read clearer if it just says makes, M-A-K-E-S, instead of may make. because the income guidelines are pretty clear. You either are in or you're not. And what this amendment does is it tries to reinforce the vision that brokers play a very important role in this, and that they are going to be the objective, you know, helpers of people who are going to be making choices, and providing them both the pros and cons of different aspects of the products. And so the first part of the amendment provides a little more description of the training that brokers would provide receive. They right now are in the bill, must take 4 hours of training. And this says some of the components that they're going to have to learn about. I've heard from some people who sell auto insurance who think this might be a new line for them, so we wanted to make sure that they knew something about health insurance. I'm told by others who are in the business, once they learn how complicated it is, they'll run away, but we'll see. It provides that, and then the later part of the amendment provides that they won't discourage or encourage, you know, purchasing of a particular of a defined contribution, that they'll just, you know, help people weigh those options, and that on lines 110 to 121, it just makes sure that an insurance broker would not sell an individual policy to someone who's qualified for MA by first checking out their income, seeing whether or not they qualify. And then if the broker wasn't someone who felt comfortable helping someone, they could refer them to a navigator. But we just want to make sure that those who are eligible for the medical assistance benefit or the tax pay credits are aware of it. And that would be the intent of the broker community anyhow. And the second under G is that a broker or an insurance producer that offers plans in the small group market should also make sure that they're inform that employer of if they have any options to establish a Section 125 plan under the IRS statutes, which actually reduces the cost of insurance both to the employer and the employees. And current law right now provides some benefits to small group employers and employees when the employer pays 50% or more of the cost of employee premiums, which is just the current law. If that were to change, then we can deal with this in later issues, because I know there'll be some people who want to discuss that. But anyhow, the intent of this amendment is just to make sure that the people who are selling these products are seen as trusted, objective resources in helping people weigh their options, and that they're trained on that. With that, I'd be glad to answer questions. Like I said, this does reflect language suggestions from both the health and commerce, or the exchange and commerce. On the training, we may need to kind of refine the wording a little bit yet as we go along.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I have just one question. Then I just wanted to make, well, first off, my question is, in lines 1.10 through 1.15, as I sat here and read it, if there is an individual who, for whatever it is, let's assume that they qualify for assistance, but they just don't believe in it, this would still enable an agent or broker to sell them a health benefit plan in the individual market, as long as they apprise that individual that they were eligible for something else. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, that is absolutely correct, that they would still have free choice. This just means they'd make an informed choice.
And then, Mr. Chair, my second question is, did Representative Loeffler get a chance to visit with the brokers about whether this, I understand the intent, and it seems very earnest and appropriate, but I just, sometimes they catch little things. I just want to make sure they had a chance to visit about the language in here as we sit here today.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, we did have a chance to talk just briefly. In fact, the language change on 1.11 came from them, and I did say that we may still want to refine the training language a bit as we continue on, but they understand the intent.
And Representative Atkins.
Thank you. Finally, Mr. Chair, and I expressed the same I don't know that it's reluctance as much as it is concern, that when we start to dictate these sorts of things, it troubles me what we may have forgotten or what might change over the course of time. And those are the kinds of concerns that I'd raise. I don't necessarily oppose the amendment, but am concerned about being too specific in what we require relative to the training or what we require of the agents, and what it may set us up for in the future by virtue of placing it in statute. So that's kind of my concern, and I would further that by saying if it goes on, which I suspect it probably will, that I would look forward to working further with the exchange folks, Representative Loeffler and the agents and brokers, to make sure that to the extent we put it in statute, that we leave ourselves some ability to adapt as future market or risk or whatever the case may be, changes may require.
Mr. Wilkin, would you like to comment? And welcome back to room 10, where you and I spent a lot of time.
Many, many hours, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Tim Wilkin. I represent the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters and the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform. And I would concur with Representative Atkins' comments. Representative Loeffler has worked with us to refine the language. Maybe it needs a little bit more of an iteration, because I do have similar concerns in paragraph F, where it says must not sell unless first assisting in determining eligibility. It doesn't just say in offering that they may be eligible. There are often clients who are eligible but do not wish to purchase or pursue a subsidy or a public program. So that language might need some refining. We also have a little bit of discomfort in the requiring the Section 125 part, because if the feds change that language in Section 125, it may not have the same benefit that it has now. And so we'd have to be recommending something that isn't currently as beneficial if there is a federal law change. And there's just a few other things we'd like to work with Representative Loeffler on cleaning up too, but that's the current state of the amendment.
Thank you, and we have a number of other people ready to go here. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in light of that, Mr. Wilkins, are you thinking it should be withdrawn so that you can work on it some?
Mr. Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, we'd certainly work with in whichever method the committee wishes, but I think it's always easiest to perfect the language before it goes on. That being said, we'll work with Representative Loeffler in either manner.
Representative Loeffler, do you have a comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think as a policy statement from this committee, I would like to have it adopted, if possible, and continue to refine the language. I think in future committees, they aren't health policy committees, and I think they will accept our refining of language better than they would adopting something that's really out of their bailiwick. And I would definitely be willing to offer an oral amendment if Mr. Chen would help me with that would add on to line 1.15, a statement that says nothing shall require a person eligible for MAGI public health programs or premium assistance to have to take advantage of that, so that it's clear that the choice remains with the individual. In terms of responding to potential federal law changes or future law changes, every law we pass has that risk, and the, you know, those of us who serve on this committee probably know it more than ever, that they always do change, and it's just our obligation to continually to update the statutes as things change. But that doesn't mean I don't think that we can't make a policy statement that says, you know, whatever is in the current law, your broker should be informed about and be able to give you good information about. That I think that's one of the hopes and expectations of the training, is that if there's something that's going to make it more cost effective for a small employer or an individual to afford insurance, that they'd know about it. And so I like keeping this in here. If we adopt other changes or the federal government adopts other changes, we can update it. But this is just trying to say the broker should be that person who's informed and helps you make an informed choice.
Could you, Representative Atkins?
Just one final, as I'm trying to...
We're going to do her amendment in a minute.
Yeah, on line 1.8, discourage or encourage. Mm-hmm. Is that specifically, I'm trying to plug it into the bill itself. Mm-hmm. I think that might be what brokers and agents are paid to do. And so at least that particular piece, I'm not terribly comfortable with it. We can keep working on other stuff or withdraw it and work it on in ways and means or somewhere else. But that gets kind of the heart of what agents and brokers are paid and sought after.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Loeffler.
This specific provision is related to to language that's in the underlying bill that says that a broker can't discourage an employer from offering a defined contribution plan. And I just felt like they shouldn't necessarily be required to encourage it. You know, they shouldn't discourage or encourage. They should say, here's an option, here's the pros and cons, and let the employer make the decision. The other option would be to delete that section, because there's all kinds of other ways to structure a small employer group plan and premium sharing. Yeah. There's cafeteria plans, there's all kinds of different things. And so, I mean, I just felt like rather than trying to delete that, because I think there's some people who really like to see that highlighted as an option, that this should just say that the broker will give them information about it and let the customer, that small employer, make the choice. And I think that reinforces that role of the broker is helping people understand pros and cons of structuring it any particular way.
Well, we were getting ready to have an amendment, so I would like to restrict it to that amendment. And Representative Loeffler, if you could repeat your amendment, which was on line 1.15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm hoping Mr. Chun has gotten even better language, and I defer to him.
Mr. Chun.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Loeffler, you could perhaps consider something like this. Page 1, line 15, after the period, nothing in this paragraph requires an individual to enroll in premium assistance or a MAGI public health program.
Okay, any discussion of that amendment? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually having to do with the broader language of this particular amendment.
Okay,
is that
we'll
germane?
Get
no?
Back to you
okay.
Then. Okay. Any other discussion of the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So now we're back to the amendment as amended. Any discussion? And
Mr.
I think Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Mr. Wilkin. If how does this language, how would this language change the way that brokers are currently doing business right now when you're going through different plans and different options with customers?
Mr. Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Halverson, I think on page or line 1.8, it could be problematic just because are you encouraging or discouraging? I mean, brokers make recommendations, and so we want to make sure we can still make a positive or negative recommendation on something as fits the client. I'm not exactly sure how it'll work now with the amendment on paragraph F, but at the end there on G, it's you basically have to say that Section 125 plans will be beneficial. We just don't know where that will land if the federal government makes any changes in the future. So I'd hate to have to rely on a legislative session coming in subsequent to a federal change in tax law in Section 125. And hoping that the legislature passes something so we don't have to tell clients something that doesn't exist anymore or has changed significantly.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently, when brokers are working with clients, do you do any kind of evaluation for programs that clients might be eligible for if you find through income that they might be currently eligible for something like Minnesota Care? Do those conversations currently happen with clients?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Halverson, I believe they do. It depends on the client if they're looking for that kind of thing. Brokers aren't primarily trained to evaluate eligibility for public programs. If there's an affordability problem, they'd probably refer them to their county for evaluation. But brokers don't currently do that.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if we're going to come back tonight or tomorrow, but I'm just not comfortable with this amendment. I don't oppose it. I don't think that the agents oppose it, but I think none of us could tell you what we're going to vote on. And so if this could be held, Representative Loffley, have accomplished your purpose of bringing the topic forward in the proper committee. If we get done today and it doesn't get done, I know Representative Atkins would be happy to bring it as a clarification of a technical change or a change that was made in either tax committee or in Ways and Means. And I would support that because I'm on the Ways and Means. But we should have testimony about this because we don't know what the impact is, and that we don't have time today for that kind of testimony. But I think if you would go into your office and work with the people that are concerned about this, come back with something everybody agrees on, it's going to sail on with no trouble. And then we can. That's my advice to you.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and members, I actually think, though, it's better process to put something on and then refine it, which is what we've done on a number of amendments here as a statement of the intent of the committee, which is, and this amendment is just to say people will be given the objective information on which to make a decision. And I'm glad to work on refining the language if it needs to be. I don't know that we could ever have language in statute that could anticipate any potential federal change in the IRS code. But we do know that over the last couple of decades that employers have saved both themselves and their employees a tremendous amount of money by using Section 125 advantages, which are current federal IRS law. And so this just says, but in the exchange, in the new marketplace under the Affordable Care Act, not all plans will qualify for that. And so this just says that they have to notify them of which plans qualify. It doesn't say they have to do anything other than that, but to notify them, because the small business person is running their business. They are not insurance experts. That's why they use a broker. But they're not going to necessarily understand that the rules have changed and that not all group plans will qualify for this. And so I just wanted the broker to notify them that not all group plans will qualify in the future, and that's something they have to think about as they're looking at their options. And so it's really just about full disclosure so that that small business person makes a legitimate choice, because that is changing in the law. The Section 125 plans law is not changing, but the fact that not all group plans will qualify is a change, and I think I want an informed consumer in the part of a small business person who's, hopefully we've got lots of them, hundreds and hundreds of them, who will step up under this new opportunity and make good choices with the help of a broker.
Well, members, I think we should vote on this now. We're going to leave here at about 5 minutes to, and we have seven amendments left, and my intent is to take those up tomorrow at the regular time. What was that, 10 o'clock? And before we get to this vote, however, I want to thank all the members. I think that this meeting went very well, and people were on track and kept their comments to what we were discussing. And we got a lot more amendments done than I ever thought we would get done this morning. Yes. So we have the A-156 amendment as amended. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I think the amendment fails.
Division
has been called. And I will say that I'm deaf in this ear, so.
That's why we've been losing on this night.
We should start singing.
So would folks in favor raise their hand?
Oh, no.
Got it? Okay, and those opposed, raise their hands. Jim's got it, too. Okay, the vote was 8-8, so that the amendment fails, and we... why don't we just quit right now, because I think we'd probably take more than about 2 minutes to get through the next amendment. And that one's just been handed out. For some reason, the A-157 was not in your packet, but it was introduced in time. And we'll see you all tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And meeting is adjourned.